Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches, the podcast where we are bitches. No, I'm just kidding. hi, Mindy.
Hi, Rachel.
How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you today?
I am great. I am so excited for this episode today. Not only the episode itself, but who we have joining us today. I woke up, I couldn't sleep. I was just super excited, so... Shall we?
Yes. I'm so excited. In fact, you know me, I get up in the morning and I get on the treadmill every morning and I listened to this man's podcast this morning with you, Ms. Rachel Bilson.
What?
And yes, because I love to. It gets me through my workout and yeah, it was a great way to start the morning. So we are joined by
the one, the only Danny Pellegrino.
Hello. Oh my God. I'm so excited to be here. I have so many questions for you. And I know your listeners are probably like, who the heck is that? And I understand, but I just would like to say to them all that I'm here as a fan of your show and I'm here to work for the people. So I have some questions for you guys and I'm excited to talk about the episode. Rachel has been on my show, Everything Iconic, before, and I got to sort of gush over her already. But Melinda, I have to say, you are truly one of the best actors ever. And I think your work in the OC, I think stands on the shoulders of, it's so good. Every single line reading is perfect. It's flawless acting. And it's so impressive how before Rachel came on my show, my boyfriend and I started rewatching the OC and then it just sort of happened weirdly at the time. Then, Rachel had come on. And so now we're sort of at the end of season three in our rewatch. And the eye just goes to you when you're on screen, Melinda Clark. And I think part of it is your stunning eyes. Here I am gushing. It sounds like
I agree.
I'm laying it on maybe too thick. But part of it, you're so stunningly beautiful, but it's you can't take your eyes off of you and you hang on every single word that sort of drips out of your mouth in a way. During the rewatch. And so I just had to gush for a second because you're so good.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I was given great material and the freedom to just be the tornado that Julie Cooper is, where she's just, she's leveling everything in her path.
Yeah. And as a gay man, I think we were attracted to both of your characters, I think. And in so many ways, you guys were, just so good. We wanted to, you were our way in and the two of your characters are just who we sort of wanted to be, I think.
Aww,
at least yes. I can speak for myself.
Thank you so much. We love that.
I know. And I agree with everything you just said, Danny, about Melinda. She's incredible.
I mean, it's so good, Rachel. Aww. It's incredible because we've been rewatching it.
I know. Well, that's...
Man, you just wait for Melinda to show up in the episode. Sometimes you're like, I need her again. And I know Melinda's been great in everything. I used to watch Entourage with my brothers and she stole every scene that she was in there too, and she was just a guest star, but so good.
So good. And Danny,
you need to come on every episode.
Yeah, she was just like, please come on every single time.
Well, I have lots of questions for the two of you.
Great. Love that.
First, I want to ask, I know Rachel, I had asked you, did you have crushes on the set? But I want to know sort of when you showed up on set to the OC, who gave you butterflies? Maybe they didn't turn out to be someone that you loved, but when you first saw someone, the way that I first saw Luke when he came onto my screen, Chris Carmack, it was I got butterflies just as a viewer. So who did you get butterflies when you saw?
It's, you know what? I'm going to say something so funny because we're rewatching this episode today, or we rewatched it. It's episode 15, The Third Wheel, and the band Rooney's on it, right? And so this is not from the beginning, but when they came on screen, as I was rewatching, I was like, gosh, they're all really cute. why didn't I date one? Like, that's what like went through my head when I rewatched the episode. I watched it yesterday and I was like, dude, Rooney's cute. I bet there were so many cute musicians and I was, you know, a little busy. So I missed out on it, but I was like, man, should have had a chance with a musician. But anyway,
there is something about rock stars, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I missed that
boat. Have either of you dated a rock star before? Have you dated?
No. Have I?
No, I have not.
Have I? It's like, I don't remember. It's possible. Rachel. It's possible there's someone in there. Maybe it'll resurface.
Is this a rumor? Forgive me if this is inappropriate to ask, but Rachel, did you date JC Chazet for a minute?
What?
Was that a thing?
That's a rumor.
Is that okay? Rumor. Okay,
no,
good.
He's really nice. And I was good friends with his manager at the time. So he was around sometimes. He's a super nice guy, but no, never dated.
Yeah, because you know, I love my turtleneck king. I love JC.
Turtleneck king. Who doesn't love a turtleneck king? That's awesome. He does. He always rocks a turtleneck. What is up with that?
You're being gently choked.
Maybe that's his thing.
That's a Mitch Hedberg joke.
So, Melinda, you got to tell me, who did you get butterflies when you saw? Was there one of the guys or the women that when you first saw them, you know,
on the OC?
Got a little butterfly.
Yeah. Or just in general?
On the OC.
I think in the very, probably in the pilot, it was so cool to see Peter Gallagher. I have to be honest, because I had seen, I knew him from the Idolmaker. But who else? I don't know if I got, I once saw Sean Connery on the street. That gave me butterflies, but that's not what we're talking about. Yeah. So, I think it would have been Peter.
That's a good one though. That's a good one. Sean Connery's.
I thought you were going to say Tate.
Well, yes, Tate. We're watching these shows and people keep asking about, in this particular episode, he gets together with Haley and I realized I had this response, like, stay away from my man.
Jealous. Yeah.
I don't like this.
I mean, Tate was gorgeous too. And I of course remember him from Friends and Hercules, and he's got some sort of, yes, he's good looking, but he also has some sort of attraction. I think
he's a joy for life.
Yeah.
You can tell what kind of life somebody's had by their smile lines or frown lines. The man has a lot of smile lines. Sorry for repeating.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I just thought, you know who I think is still so hot is Logan Marshall Green.
Hello. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
I know. Gorgeous.
Because thinking back.
Unfollow him on Instagram because I couldn't even look at him. It was like too much for me. I was like, this is not healthy for my self-esteem. Like, I'm just going to bow out.
Yeah. He's a good looking dude for sure. At the time, I don't think, you know, again, I was preoccupied. So, but looking back, I'm having all these like look backs, flashbacks, like, ooh, yeah, I didn't pay his attention as much as I should have. What?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having him on the show. He's coming on the show. But that's another season. He doesn't know yet, but he's coming.
I know. I was like, did you talk to him? Can I have his number? No, I'm just kidding.
Is there anyone that you've reached out to from the show that has said no, or has it just been like maybe down the line?
We've gotten no responses from some people, but we've gotten a lot of yeses. So there are many to look forward to. One is still up in the air.
Well, I have this idea in my head of what I want you guys to do. Now,
Please tell us.
Watched a lot of interviews for the two of you. Yeah. And I know everyone always asks you in every single interview, like, can there be a reunion? What's going on with the reunion? We want a reunion. And I understand the idea of like keeping this a separate thing. Mm-hmm. But now what I find so fascinating is that HBO Max is doing these reunions, like the Friends one or the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air one, that is sort of this weird hybrid reunion where you're not, it's not necessarily a reboot, but it's the cast getting together to talk about the show, which I know is what you guys are doing on here. But I would love to see some sort of hybrid of like this podcast with one of those types of reunions for HBO Max. That's what I want to happen.
Well, I want
so
that to happen.
I'm so glad you brought this up. Yeah. Rachel, have you seen the trailer for The Friends? By the time people hear this will already be out, I think. But have you seen the trailer for The Friends?
I watched it yesterday and yes, I cried. I did.
Me too.
You did.
You
know when I cried, which is ironic, is when Phoebe goes, my eyes. Like it just brought me back and I love her so much.
Which is the best episode of Friends.
Oh my
God. One where everybody finds out
about
me. That's the best one.
Get off my sister.
Okay. But I think we could do something similar, right?
Yeah, I say yes.
Without having to write a scripted series and try to figure out if there's kids involved and who's not involved, and let's leave our show the way it was back in the past, and let's have a night of celebration.
I think that's a great idea.
Don't get me wrong, though. I also still want the reboot. Like, that's my compromise, because I feel like it's going to be hard to get that to happen. But I feel like, you know, that's a good compromise. Like, we get everyone and we do like a big celebration, maybe like a little table read, a scene read or something.
Yeah, I think we're putting it out there now, and I think it should happen. I'm with you. But you have to be on it somehow.
I could host.
There you go.
I can just scream in the audience. They could just cut to me with like my eyes wide and excited.
But Danny, how old were you when you first saw the OC?
God. Okay. So I was in college. I think I was graduating high school when the show premiered. It premiered like the summer after I graduated. And mm-hmm. I remember watching the show in my college dorm rooms. It was like I think it was Thursday nights. Everyone would get together and then we'd go out. So we would all watch. And what's fascinating, because I was thinking back to that time, because it was such a huge deal in my college to watch it, I was thinking, like, you guys weren't just pop culture. You were really creating pop culture trends, because I remember all the women or all the girls in the dorm wanted to dress like Misha. And the Julie Cooper character, moms were imitating that with the Juicy Couture. And I remember getting, like, I wanted a leather bracelet because, you know, Ryan was wearing it. And I got the track jackets like Adam Brody's character. And so it's so fascinating, because if you really think about it, I'm a huge pop culture junkie, but when you think about it, there's a handful of things that set trends throughout time. Oftentimes, these even really huge shows, they're just following trends. But in a lot of ways, I think with music, with fashion, you guys were creating trends, which is wild. Like, it's a huge accomplishment. And then you even see it as my boyfriend and I are rewatching this show. I think you can see the evolution with the fashion, and it starts off a little bit rustier. And then even by, like, I'd say mid season two, everyone's in these gorgeous outfits, mm-hmm. and it's, and maybe it feels more high end, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it shifted for you guys on set, but it felt that way in the rewatch.
Yeah.
We had three different designers, Rachel.
I believe three or two.
Yeah, well, anyway, definitely had a progressive growth. And I think a lot of the actors probably had some input. I know I had input.
Well, yeah, and, you know, everyone wanted to send Misha stuff. So, you know, Chanel started, you know, piling in for Misha, and it just elevated everything, I think.
But you it's do wild. Touch on something that's really important, that music was presented in a way that had never been done before. And ultimately that was based on Josh's tastes and his iPod. And this episode in particular mm-hmm. was our first concert episode, and which of course eventually led to the bait shop. And this set the tone for that.
It affected all of our iPads. I was at a college, Ohio University in Ohio. And it was like, we were taking music at that time from the shows and then from your show. And then other shows started to sort of follow suit with the indie bands. And so seeing Rooney in this episode, it was wild to think back on that. And in terms of the fashion, I thought this was such a fun episode because first of all, we had Rachel. I don't know what that's
like
called.
Like a pompadour ponytail situation. Yeah.
And then Misha had was it crimped hair?
Yeah, wait, hold on. What's so funny, and people who can't see me, my hair, ironically, like how I slept in it, it's kind of crimped today. So I am in theme with this episode. If you saw, like, I am just an ode to Misha's hair in this episode. Everyone's totally fitting for, like, going to a concert. Like, Summer's totally concert rocker out, and Misha with her crimped hair. Anyway.
It's interesting. During my rewatch, I'm noticing sort of how fast the storylines move. And it's good in a lot of ways because you don't get too tired of something like the Oliver. I know we're going to talk about Oliver because he arrived in this episode, but I hated Oliver. I think most people did. But it moves quick enough that by the time you really start to hate him, he's gone.
He actually arrived in the Chrismica. He had one scene and then he was in the episode before this, and he's in six episodes total.
Six episodes too many for that character. Everyone hated it.
It should have been one and a half a one or something. But then on the other hand, I think like there's a lot of people who I wish sort of stuck around. Like Luke, I always think should, this episode in particular I was watching, he should have been around the whole time because he's so funny. It felt like they found a really good way in with him. I don't know if there was some other reason.
Yeah, we're going to.
Reason why he left, but he was so funny.
Yeah, I know. He steals this episode, which I think we'll get into. But you know, we should talk about the episode, the synopsis with the episode that we're talking about that we have here is Ryan doesn't know too much about Oliver, Marissa's new friend from therapy, but he knows he doesn't like him. But when Oliver invites them all to a Rooney concert, the gang, minus Ryan, is psyched. Yet Ryan still is the hero when Oliver gets into some trouble at the Rooney concert. Written by Melissa Rosenberg, who, fun fact, went on to write all the Twilight movies. Directed by Sandy Smolin. Edited by Matt Ramsey. It's called The Third Wheel, this episode, by the way.
I reached out to Matt Ramsey, our editor, who you all have heard before. Our editors are so important in the storytelling. And one of the first things he told me was that this episode in particular, Josh did not like the first edit. And he said that it was one of the very first big hiccups that we had in season one. He didn't remember all the details, but but that was a little tidbit of info there.
I like this one because I thought it was so humor heavy and it started to feel like this was one of the episodes where it really found footing in terms of like the humor element mixed with the teen drama, which you guys always did really well. But I don't know, it felt like that mix of this episode just really worked.
Well, you know what?
In my eyes.
What really worked for me in this episode was the Golden Girls strung throughout the entire thing.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.
And
the
also,
whole thing.
Oh yeah, the whole thing. It was a Golden Girls episode, which made me so happy. And Josh put Golden Girls in because he loved taking little snippets from our lives. And he knew that I was obsessed with Golden Girls. So I think that was the inspiration for involving Golden Girls in the show and in this episode. And being able to sing the theme song was probably my favorite scene of all time.
Rachel, I wanted to ask about your singing too. Like, do you sing? What's your experience with singing?
I can carry a tune, but I'm very, like, I get super embarrassed to sing for people. But I'm not tone deaf. I'll just.
I want to see you in like a musical or something, Rachel.
That's my. Are you kidding? That would be my
voice in that little.
Oh, thanks, Danny. My dream is to do a musical. Gravity,
Rachel.
Oh,
like, please. Who do we have to call?
Oh my God, let's just sing Gravity right now. Take it away.
Can I tell you guys something about Golden Girls?
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, because Haley was talking to Jimmy about it, and she was saying she brings up Golden Girls, and that she says she has a lot in common with 70-year-old. But Bea Arthur and Betty White were 63 when it debuted. Rue McClanahan was 51, a year younger than me.
What?
It's crazy. And what? And isn't Sophia as younger than
Sophia?
Dorothy,
yes,
I
Sophia. She was younger. Because she's my Sophia is my favorite.
I'm a golden girl.
Isn't Hollywood the worst though? I mean, Melinda, as I'm watching the OC, I'm like, she was like, how old were you? You were like 30.
32, 33 at the beginning. Yeah.
I mean, like, that's so wild.
Crazy.
I know the character could have had a kid, but it's just so wild to me. It's like, and I feel like you were so close in age to Benjamin McKenzie, who's dating your daughter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
I think Ben in this episode for the first, he came off way too mature. I mean, he came off great, but he just had so much maturity, especially like in the scene with Oliver at the end in the police station. And it just felt like, oh, I can see the wisdom of this young man, not necessarily a 16-year-old. That was my thought.
What I noticed watching Ben this episode is he and Misha, they had to kiss a lot. Like
they did
make
out a lot.
Point out,
yeah.
It felt like every episode they kiss a lot on the show.
Not in every episode.
Well, I think it.
Not when she's with Luke.
There's only these moments of happiness with them. They're very fleeting. I've noticed.
Oh, interesting. They were very hot and heavy, though. They were fully like they're a couple sitting on the lap. He pulls her away, make out, all of it. I agree with you. There was a lot of tongue swapping. I have a very important thing to talk about this episode, the third wheel, everybody. So yes, Rooney is on the show. It's the first concert. I think that's there's a lot going on in this episode, so much to cover. And we'll get into Oliver because Danny, I really want to hear your perspective on him. But the Rooney concert. So I tend to not have much of a memory about shooting the shows and whatnot. And that's been established. We've talked about it. I actually have pictures from this particular episode behind the scenes of Misha, Samira, and I doing the electric slide on stage, fully in like the down, leg out, hand back moment of the electric slide. I have a picture of Misha on Rooney's drums. A lot of fun behind the scenes stuff. So I know we had so much fun shooting this concert, and it was Rooney and it was super cool. And I actually remember it.
You know, I always think about your show. You know the song, Maybe I'm Amazed. I don't know if that played in like the season one finale.
I think Jem covers it or something, right?
Jem covers it. And we used to watch your show in Ohio, schools across the country. And there was like something called LimeWire back mm-hmm. in the day, and Napster, where you would download music. And I remember in the version of Maybe I'm Amazed that I had, Rachel's character is talking about cocktail weenies. So like every time I would listen to it, because I downloaded the song allegedly, maybe not legally, I would always hear the characters talking in the middle of it. So every time I think of music in your show, there's...
You think of cocktail weeners?
Cocktail weenies. You say something like, I thought you'd be stuffing your face with cocktail weenies. And it's like in the middle of the song. So you can't escape it if you're listening to it.
That's at Julie's Wedding.
Julie's Wedding, yeah. And a lot of the music, when people would download it in that way, there'd be little OC. So I'm sure there's like versions of a Rooney song that people had downloaded from LimeWire where we can hear your characters in the background or a crowd. But it's such a product of its time. I think there was a lot of music at that time that had little dialogue snippets in it.
That's hilarious. I want those versions. That's really funny.
Can we talk about the Anna character for a minute?
Can we?
Okay. Because I want to talk about her makeup. Now, I think I mentioned this to Rachel when she was in my show. Sometimes, I don't know, was that a product of its time, the makeup on? Or were you guys creating those makeup looks? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, what came first?
I mean, I would say it's a combo. Because like the YSL had this blush that was in a jar and it had like the puff attached to it. And they had the brightest colors, and you would just like, you know, use the whole tool to just put the blush on your face. Do you know, remember the product I'm talking about, Mindy, or no?
I think yes. And it was definitely a choice that Samira, mm-hmm. I think she had those apple cheeks, and you put that bright, bright pink. That was a sign of the time, that right on the apples of the cheeks. And
the
and
colors.
Then very dark on the eyelids, but her face could handle it. I loved her style, and I loved
it. It was very distinct. You know, this episode, they're dating and they're trying to tell Summer, you know, and I forgot how Summer reacted to the news, but what, Danny, if you had to tell Summer and you were Seth and you're dating Anna, what do you think you would have done?
Or should have done?
I mean... I loved this little love triangle between the three of them. And I love specifically, this is sort of a broader thing in terms of the Summer character, is I think that the Summer character always reacted almost like the opposite as you would think the character would mm-hmm. react, if that makes mm-hmm. any sense. Because she's this popular, gorgeous girl that in high school. And then you would think that she would just say, screw this guy. He just told me he's with this other girl. But instead, she sort of decides to be the third wheel. And it's so funny and so unexpected for that character. And I think that's what's so great about that moment. Because No one would think that. You would be like, but then it does make sense in a weird way that she wants to be the third wheel.
Well, she's manipulative. Right? Mm. Right. Is she?
But what was the carrot about?
The what?
The carrot.
I thought you said the Karen, and I was like, what? What did I, did I go really right
Summer
wing
was
or
just
something?
Eating a carrot, the carrot the whole time.
It was a great choice. It was really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. I make these choices sometimes. Like when I had a fight about wanting to chew gum in a scene. I don't know. I don't know.
Matt Ramsey, our editor, he and I have been communicating about this episode, and he said, will you please ask Rachel about the carrot? It's so funny.
You know,
so that was your choice, the carrot.
Let's just it was the Meryl Streep of the episode. You know, it was just the strongest choice. I streeped it.
Anna was a character, though, that I would have liked to stick around for longer, too. It was like she was so good on the show, and I would have loved to see more.
I think
she pops up again.
She does, I believe. But, you know, I think they really were trying to see who they wanted Seth to ultimately be paired with. Like, I don't think it was a decision that they knew that it was always going to be Summer. I think it was just kind of something that progressed, whether it was going to be Anna or Summer. And I won, frankly.
She was only slated for the very first episode of the debut. And then they decided to bring her back. And actually, Josh was writing when she left. Josh was asked to write a show for her, but then he realized it was too much. Yeah.
Really?
It was going to be a show based on Anna, and
he realized
it was too much, and he needed to be focused on the OC.
Interesting.
Yeah, but
was there a rumor at one point that the OC was going to cross over with Gossip Girl? Am I making that up? Because didn't Josh create Gossip Girl?
No, it was Arrested Development. He was approached by the creator of Arrested Development for us actors to play ourselves on Arrested Development, and he thought that was too inside meta.
Huh.
Yeah. That Josh had
never knew that either. I'm learning so much today. I always learn a lot.
Can we talk a little bit about Oliver?
Yeah, please, Danny, please just share your thoughts.
My arch nemesis.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't care for this Oliver character. I think he comes in, he's got a little too much, a little too cockiness with the Mercer character. And there was a point in this episode where he feeds her some, Mediterranean food or something.
Moroccan.
And I got so upset with this man. Like, and I'm just watching as a viewer, and I've seen the episode before. Like, I've watched it. I know exactly who this person is. And I'm watching it again last night to prepare for this podcast. I'm like, God, I hate that man so much with every ounce of my being. He's the worst. And I think on some level, yes, it's great to have a character that, you know, you feel so strongly about, but I was so ready for him to go. And then at the end of the episode, when he gets caught for selling or buying coke or something from the undercover cop, and then he tells Ryan, like, don't tell everyone else. I was like, screw you, Oliver. Ryan needs to go tell the whole gang about this because I'm tired of Ryan having to cover for your ass. And here he is. He's just the worst.
He is the worst. Okay. Even how he just says, it's Moroccan. Like, don't you want to hit him in the face? Like, when she's on the phone with Ryan, it's Moroccan.
And I feel bad for that actor on some level because everyone hated him.
Right. So
there was a time in history.
He's obviously doing a good job then, right? Because everyone.
It was a great villain. It was a great villain. But the audience, oh my God, we hated him.
I don't understand how Marissa didn't see it. You know, she plays into it so much. And I'm just like.
That's what a lot of fans have asked. I asked people to ask me about this episode. And I think Marissa is attracted to wounded birds and she wants to save them as well and do the, you know, especially, you know, now that she's doing better and she's had her issues in Tijuana and somehow buys into this character. And did you know what the inspiration behind Oliver was?
Mm-mm. No. Who?
Josh knew a guy who dated his friend. And this guy faked cancer to keep this girl. And he thought that was kind of fascinating that somebody was that desperate, that was the inspiration in his head. Then, of course, it is the classic clever wedge to drive a wedge between Ryan and Marissa. But in hindsight, Josh has said that at the time, Danny, you're responding the same way most adults were responding, because we did have an adult audience, but the average 10th grader was on their seats and on the edge of their seats. And it was a difference. There was a difference. The adults really couldn't stand where the younger crowd wasn't as antagonistic towards this antagonist.
Interesting. Interesting.
I found out.
There was someone on a Housewives show who was accused of faking cancer for her significant other, and which is like a crazy thing. You would think no one would do it. Who could do that sort of thing? But it literally happened on TV. And then also just while we're here, I have to say that in a lot of ways, the OC sort of led to a lot of the reality TV we see these days, because the OC led to Laguna Beach, which led to The Hills, which led to The Housewives. So you're to blame for all that.
You're to blame.
No, Josh wants a piece of that franchise.
Yeah. Julie Cooper was in a lot of ways the blueprint for Housewives. And there's a very small segment of the, or actually a growing segment of the population that wants you, Melinda Clark, to join Housewives on Orange County or what? Tell me.
Well, okay. A few years back, probably 3 or 4 years ago, maybe even more, I don't know. I got a call from my agent saying that they're interested. I don't know if it was a straight up offer, but they first of all, I don't live in Orange County. Second of all, I don't have the armor to put myself out there and do what's required. And I know that in those shows, you're an expert on that. One has to be completely put everything out there. And I think I'm a little too fragile, to be honest. I'm not Julie Cooper, put it that way. Julie Cooper
would definitely be on it.
Yes.
I mean, that would be like the best casting ever, though, to have you, even just for like an episode. I'd like to see you on Beverly Hills. You know, there's a lot of actors in the Beverly Hills edition. So there's,
that's true.
You know, Lisa Rinna, Denise Richards was there. I mean, I want to see Melinda pop up, even just as a friend or something.
I was actually asked to be on The Hills that I graciously passed. And then who they wound up casting was Misha.
Oh my God, on the reboot. So they went to you first. So did you know a lot of The Hills people?
No, I don't know any of them. I've met Lauren Conrad before.
On Valentine's Day, 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
But she's not even on that show, but she was, right? Didn't she start it? Or like she was like the first.
Yeah, she started The Hills.
I like Lauren a lot. I know her a little tiny bit and she's cool, but I don't know anyone from The Hills. No.
The Misha's casting on The Hills was very interesting to me. I thought she was great on the show, but for some reason, I don't know if it was her choice or the second season just recently sort of started and she didn't return for it. But I thought her story was interesting and she got into a lot of the stuff regarding that era of the OC and fame. Hmm. And there was a couple scenes where she talked about her experiences, not specifically with the OC, but that time. Yeah. And I thought it was so fascinating to watch, but they didn't go with that angle. I don't know.
But did she say she was bullied and mistreated and all of that? Or was it a better, more positive experience?
You know, it wasn't about the OC, but it was like that time in Hollywood that she talked about.
She got to confront Perez, I think.
Right.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
How'd that go?
Yeah, he was on the show because he, at that time, always used to draw stuff on pictures. Did he do that to you? I mean, he used to do that to everyone.
Nobody was that interested in me.
The kids definitely had a lot more scrutiny, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think what we should do while we have you here, and because you love Chris Carmack and Luke so much. And Luke, stole this episode. I'm sorry. Like, I was laughing. I loved seeing him come out and, you know, he had so much fun. He plays the guitar. And I think, Melinda, did you say you thought he wrote that song? that he plays?
Well, Matt
backstage?
Thought he wrote that song. So I reached out to Chris, and asked him, because the fans were just asking the same questions that Rachel and I are asking. And he left us a memo, and we thought we could listen to it and react to it.
Together.
Hey, Rachel and Melinda. Thanks for having me back on the show. I guess you guys are discussing season one, episode 15, the Rooney episode, in which we see a very different incarnation of Luke Ward, some different sides that we've never seen before. And sounds like you're having a lot of inquiries about that. Understandably, it was a very big departure from the Luke we've seen in the past, in some ways, and in other ways, it was the guy that we've known all along. But in previous episodes, we've seen that his father came out. In this very episode, we see that he's being ostracized by all of his old friends, his old athlete buddies. They've slashed his tire at the beginning of the episode. And he's got no friends other than the core group, you know. Seth and Ryan and Summer have sort of taken him on a little. I mean, I don't want to say as a charity case, because it's like Ryan was there with him when he discovered his dad was having an illicit affair with another man. And I think he feels a little bit of a responsibility and also compassion for Luke and what he's going through. Seth's a little less on board, but he comes there, he gets there too. It's like desperate for him to fit in. He lost all of his friends. He is hanging out with this new crowd of kids, and he's just trying to interject something into the conversation over and over again that will be, whether it's a joke or a comment, he's looking for feedback and he's just not getting it. And he's trying way too hard, you know, because Luke's not a doofus, but he's acting like one just to try to fit in, just to try to ingratiate himself into the group. Oh, and Luke performs a very memorable song in this episode when he's backstage with Rooney and Oliver gives him the guitar. That is a song that I wrote actually as a total spoof joke song when I was in college. I was abroad in Italy, and me and a few friends would sit around with guitars and just, I guess we must have had all kinds of time on our hand, because we would write these ridiculous joke songs. And I wrote this one called Rosso as a tribute to red wine and lovely ladies. It was, I probably wrote it when I was, I guess, 18 or 19 years old. I don't think it stands the test of time, but it certainly, certainly is funny in the moment. It had this like crazy rap section in it that you can hear me doing in the background. And again, Sandy rolled on the whole thing. And then I guess he dropped the audio into the background. And it's pretty hilarious to hear me back there rapping. Luke is just unleashing the beast. He's trying to be himself for the first time, and maybe he's putting a little too much out there for the first hang with these guys. Luke's showing a lot of enthusiasm for things that he doesn't really know about. He, which one's Rooney? You know, he wants to be a fan even before he's heard the music, because he wants to fit in so badly. But, you know, I think as we go forward, we see Luke calm down a little bit and get accepted a little bit more into the group. And he can dial it down a notch. Thanks again, Rachel and Melinda, for having me on. I hope everybody's enjoying the OC podcast, and I'm glad that that a new generation is discovering the OC.
He forgot to mention probably my favorite moment was at the end. And this has happened to me. That's why I love it. When you've been standing next to the speaker too long and it's too loud, you're yelling at everybody. So super, super, super endearing. And you can hear from that how sweet and kind and what it just, he's one of the good ones for sure.
I was just going to say, I was like, that gives me all I need to know about Chris Carmack because he seems like a very nice gentleman. And that moment you just mentioned about where he was sitting too close to the speaker and then we see him shouting, to me, that's representative of like what set the OC apart from something like a 90210, which 90210 really embraced a lot of the humor in the later seasons, but the OC did it from so early on. I mean, this is episode 15, and that's like a, that's almost like a sit written as a sitcom-y joke, but it works in the context of the world of the OC. And to me, that's what I loved so much about it was like, you had huge laughs amidst this plot about a character buying cocaine from an undercover cop and these dramatics with relationships. And so that to me is so amazing that you guys were able to balance both of those tones, which I don't know if people realize like how difficult that is really.
It really goes to Josh's voice and the blend of Rachel's personality and Adam's personality and even my personality, which I think you see a lot of in Julie, even though I have different, you know, priorities.
I just think it was so cute. Just back to Chris's comments.
Yeah.
The song he wrote when he was in Italy, he's like, with my supermodel girlfriend. No, I'm just kidding. You know that commercial. In the French Alps.
We need that on iTunes, that whole song.
We need that on iTunes. But how cute is that in Italy? And it's like, and he raps? I want to hear the rap part. And then also you're going to hear Cocktail Wieners in the background.
Right.
I thought that was really, really cute. The story of his song, and he got to play it and remembered it.
He was really the standout to me, but I also loved this, which felt sort of new for this episode, this group dynamic of having Anna, Summer, Seth, Ryan, Luke, even though we didn't like Oliver, it was like this was a group, but it felt like a friend group that would be hanging out together and everyone had their unique personalities. It was so fun to see all of you guys together in that way.
Yeah. I thought it was
cool. Definitely established in that episode, and it was such a nice, sweet moment at the end. They went out to a concert. Now they're watching video games. They're all hanging out. And originally, in the original cut and script, that was the end of the episode. But someone, powers that be, whether it was Fox or the producers, decided that they needed to add in creepy Oliver staring in at them at the end, which is sometimes things like that happen. I don't know. Matt Ramsey remembered that was added after the fact.
Before that moment, though, when all of the kids were playing the video games, Rachel, do you remember, was that improvised? For a moment like that, does the director just say, oh, it looked like you're having fun or giggle with each other? Or is there a specific direction?
Yeah, there's usually like a stage direction, like, you know, kids having fun or whatever it is, like some kind of direction. I actually noticed, I was like, oh, Misha and I are like really talking and laughing. I noticed at that moment. Usually there'll be, or it's a director decision in the moment. I mean, it could be either stage direction or the director asking you to do it. But I did notice like it looked like, you know, real. And we had a lot of fun, especially that first year. We were always messing around.
You know what this episode didn't have was enough Melinda Clark.
Where was she?
There was not enough in it.
Julie was off at a spa. She was doing something with her hair.
Haley's hair was out of control in the beginning of this episode. It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, she had quite a bit of it. But no, this is, I remember this specifically. I had something, a lot of people might not know this, but there's something called a 10 of 13 contract, which means that out of every 13 episodes, you only are in 10. And it's a way of, you know, it's a budget thing. It's a financial thing. But I remember I had like three episodes off where Julie and Caleb went to Paris. And then when I finally come back, that's when I have the bright red bob haircut. So that's where she was.
Oh, she was in Paris. Danny, how do you feel about answering some quiz questions?
Okay, let's go.
What foreign country did Haley mention she got into some trouble with the border police?
I feel terrible. I'm not going to get this one. What was it?
She was talking to Jimmy and then they're like, what have you been up to? It's kind of a hard one. Do you want to take a guess or do you want me to just tell you?
Italy. I don't know.
Budapest.
I don't know. Budapest.
Like naturally, the go-to.
Interesting. Now, the Haley character, she had this Golden Girls love in the show. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to remember, I know Golden Girls comes up a lot in the show, but was it all of the characters who sort of had an affinity? Or I always associate it with the Summer character of loving the Golden Girls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's how it originated, was because me personally, you know, Josh thought it was funny that I was obsessed with Golden Girls, but that's just how he introduced Golden Girls into the OC world, I think, and he made it.
Okay,
everywhere.
Now I want to know: are you more of a Rose, Blanche, Sophia, or Dorothy?
I'm Sophia.
For both of you,
Sophia.
I'm a Dorothy.
You're a Dorothy. I've never heard anybody claim Dorothy.
I know.
I'm in shock.
I know. I am. I feel it. I am a Dorothy for sure.
I respect.
I love B. Arthur.
Yeah, same. But I never hear anyone claim Dorothy. I'm just that I respect it. Mindy.
B. Arthur has the Melinda Clark quality where she can just give a look. Like there's like she can give that look. It's like look at Melinda Clark doing it right now. It's masterful. It's like masterful. You watch an episode of The Golden Girls, they just can cut to B just giving a look and it says all you need to say in a script. And the same thing with Melinda Clark. You cut to Julie Cooper and you get everything you need.
I definitely have a resting bitch face, and it's not fair if I ever wanted to scare my daughter. She admits that I have scared her with my stare, which usually would be for fun. But there's been a few times where she's like, Mommy, don't do that.
Does your daughter realize that you're an icon? Like, does she know it?
Oh yeah, she uses it. She's obsessed with Ian Somerhalder on TikTok. And her whole shtick is, my mom won't tell me what it's like to make out with Ian Somerhalder. And and so she comes up behind me with her videos and she'll say, hey mom, what was it like to make out? And I just do this. No, I'm not telling you.
By the way, I have the same question. What was it like? I want to know too.
Yeah, I want to know.
I'm saving that one for my daughter's TikTok.
It's like the Kirsten Dunst Brad Pitt question. What was it like?
And Rachel, how old's your daughter? You have a daughter
She's
too,
six.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
She's six. So she does she know that you're an icon yet?
She doesn't know. She came out of the womb with like a t-shirt on that was like, my mom played Summer Robin. She has no clue. She knows that her parents are actors, but she actually now knows that her dad is in Star Wars, but she has no clue who he is. And we want to keep it that way for as long as possible.
I mean, is that not wild? I couldn't even imagine what it'd be like to grow up and your dad's Darth Vader. Like, that's wild.
No one's going
to
fuck with you.
Like, it is wild. I know, not at all. I mean, and it's like, no, who can say that? It's crazy.
Nope.
It's actually amazing.
Yeah. No, she is. Mm-hmm. She's Princess Leia.
I can't wait for Briar to say, ew, gnarly.
No, she already started. Like, she has like this Valley girl. I don't know how it happened. I mean, obviously I am a Valley girl. I grew up in the Valley, whatever, but she literally has started like, mom, like it's already happening and she's 6 years old. So I am just terrified of what's to come.
It was so frustrating when your daughter starts ending that sentence with a question.
Oh yeah.
I'm not going to wear that. Where did you get that at? Like, oh.
No, I want to know if Melinda, probably for your daughter in her case, like, have you seen some of the OC fashions coming back with your daughter over the years? Like, because stuff always comes around. I feel like now, are we in sort of a 90s moment a little bit right now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
The kind of high-waisted mom jean thing. I said to my daughter yesterday, I said something about the tie-dye hoodies being really in. She said, not for my age. She's 21. And I said, really? Why don't you go look that up? And she went, well, maybe. But no, she won't ever. She's very... She's not flashy in her dress, but she does like the t-shirts and the high-waisted jeans.
Yeah, it's all scrunchies and chokers and slip dresses and docks and all that good 90s beauty.
I love seeing the 90s stuff back. I'm a 90s kid, so I like it all coming back.
90s kid. Oh, man.
There was one thing I wanted to say about this episode that I thought was really interesting because it ties in Ryan and Oliver, that Matt himself, the editor, said that this whole episode specifically is told from Ryan's point of view, especially in that scene, you know, when they're eating the Moroccan food and the rich kids are talking about rich things. And because it's told through his POV, that and Ryan doesn't like Oliver, then the audience is manipulated into not liking him as well. So it's not just the writing, but the performances and the editing itself to get that reaction from the audience. And it worked very well. So I just wanted to point that out because I thought it was indeed very palpable in how much dislike Oliver has here.
Now, do we like Benjamin McKenzie? Where do we stand on him?
Yes, love.
That's a messy Benjamin. Question.
Love. Okay. No. Okay.
We love everybody. Gonna,
yeah.
Okay, right.
Well.
I always get mad at, not him specifically, but, sometimes when people say who've done these shows, I get mad in interviews when they say they don't like it. Or so. I'm not saying him specifically, but whenever I watch interviews with people who are on like an iconic show, I'm always like, oh, I want them to like it.
Yeah, and no, so Ben's great.
I feel like I've maybe seen interviews where he was like,
yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've seen that as well, but I don't know what that was about. And Ben's great. He's a great guy.
And by the way, maybe it was a bad day. Maybe he was just not in the mood.
He's very professional, Ben, you know, so... Yeah. It could have been a choice. You know what I mean?
Sure. He has expressed that the amount of fame was like being on a rocket ship. And it was definitely a weird adjustment, if I'm, not paraphrasing. But yes, I think it was overwhelming for everybody.
I couldn't even imagine. Like, this show was everything. Like, I remember... the visceral experience of watching it in a dorm room that was the whole floor was getting together. I know I already mentioned this, but the whole floor came together to watch this show. And that was happening across the country. So I don't even know for you guys who were in that tornado, if you can even grasp that idea that millions of people across the country were gathering to watch you guys weekly. It's wild.
And play drinking games whenever Summer said, ooh.
Oh, you get drunk. Yeah. Danny, I want to ask you another quiz question. Okay. Redeem yourself. Okay. What song
I'll try. Now I feel bad. Okay.
No, just kidding. What song was Sandy dancing to where he wiped out some 13-year-olds at a bar mitzvah?
Oh, God. I'm terrible at this.
It's fun to... stay at the...
I don't know. I remember Melinda at the bar mitzvah in Entourage. Of her scene dancing, but I don't remember. YMCA. Yay! You guys were literally doing like the Village People for me, and I was still not sure. And then I was like, what?
You got it. Woo!
I got it.
Good one. Danny, thank
you. It's been a joy.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. And
my pleasure.
It's been so awesome. And I love that you have had Princess Sparkle and your version of Captain Oates behind you this whole interview.
Yes.
Still so, love it.
And we need that HBO Max reunion.
We do.
Let's get all of you in a room. It could be sponsored by the Welcome to the OC Bitches. Rachel, I need you in a movie musical. We need to hear you sing. You've got a beautiful voice. Let somebody hire Rachel to sing something, or can we get you to sing Luke's song or something?
Luke's
we need
song.
You on the mic.
Golden
Thank
Girls
you
only.
For being a friend. Yeah. Come on.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true.
Your heart is true.
Your heart is true.
I have to say also, Melinda, I need to see you in something regularly on television or in film, a big franchise. You're one of the greatest actors that we have, and I need people to understand that and watch one freaking, I don't know if I could swear, one freaking episode of The OC. And you can see how brilliant you are with every line reading. It's unbelievable.
Agreed.
So, okay.
Oh my gosh, you're so sweet. And thank you so much. And everybody, Danny Pellegrino, tune into his podcast, Everything Iconic.
Thank you guys so much
for
having me.
Thank you for coming on.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
That was episode 15, The Third Wheel, but we have actually with Danny Pellegrino, but we have a very, very special guest in addition to Danny Pellegrino. It is an absolute pleasure, you guys. We have Robert Schwartzman, who is the lead of Rooney. He's a filmmaker, director, screenwriter, actor, and musician. The band Rooney that we featured in this episode 15, The Third Wheel. Thank you for coming and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so cool that you're here. I feel a little starstruck.
No, I'm happy we get to reconnect and go deeper into this subject.
Yeah, let's really go there. I mean, this was such a long time ago, too. I mean, how many years ago did we? Maybe 18 or something. We shot this.
I know,
episode.
It's so crazy to think about it. I was thinking about it today, just in kind of like just thinking about what we're about to talk about, but. Just, it's so funny because like if I close my eyes, I could kind of transport myself back to when we shot that episode. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen everybody getting, we got in a limo together. There was like all these great visuals, you know, just together when you're not shooting, mm-hmm. just the in-between stuff of connecting with you guys as awesome as actors in the show and just being the band showing up to set, just like we were kind of the new people, I guess, showing up because we weren't a part of the series. We just came to that one shoot, but just, it was your turf. So we were wanting to kind of do the best we could do. And anyway, but yeah, it was, we shot it in 2003, I think,
wow.
Right?
Yeah. That sounds
it
right.
Is 18 years ago. You're right. Exactly. 18 years.
I mean, well, it's a whole adult life realized.
It really is. Yeah.
Do you remember at the time, obviously you guys have been a band for since 99, but at the time when you were asked to be on the show, do you remember that process? Do you remember being aware of the OC or do you remember that time, that invitation to be on the show?
Yeah, I remember it well. I mean, really, honestly, for some reason, music years are different than like feel like real life years. I don't know why. It's like... things feel very condensed for some reason when I think back to all things music. Mm-hmm. Like even when you go and play a show somewhere, it feels like you were just there yesterday playing a show. So I don't know. It all feels like much more recent than really it was on the page. But I remember Josh, the creator of the show, not ever meeting him at a concert, but apparently he used to come to show like Rooney concerts mm-hmm. and Fan Planet concerts and... I think at that time in LA, there was like there was a music scene of bands and it was like a real thing where we would play all these different local clubs, which are still there, like the Troubadour and the Roxy and the Whiskey Go-Go. And it was where like, you know, young audience members went to learn and discover and be a part of what was a music cultural sort of moment in LA with like these rock and roll bands. And, but I remember like Josh, I think at the time, this is what I've heard, by the way, I'm kind of recalling, this is not him saying this, it's my own like secondhand, but he was writing the show and was going to, living a life in LA, going to concerts, kind of absorbing the culture and the world he was in at that time in this sort of time and place. And I think he would see like go to live, maybe he liked live shows and loved live music and. But I think he had been to some Rooney shows and liked the band and liked the music at that time. We had a record coming out. And when we did the OC episode, it was our record, the first record, which is like the self-titled. It looks like a California flag yeah. record. Mm-hmm. That record had just come out. And as a new young artist, we were also really young at that time. I think I was maybe like 20 when that record came out, 21. So it was like, you're also just trying to get your feet on the ground and figure out what it means to actually be an artist in an industry and put records out and what is right, what is wrong, how to represent yourself. And you play the game with putting a single on the radio and trying to get spins and trying to get a video on MTV at the time, MTV. So I just kind of remember, you know, just whatever sort of comes your way, trying to do your best to make sense of it and see how it can best be beneficial to your process. And I remember getting this opportunity. At first, I think it started with wanting some music for an episode. That's how I kind of remember it. I think Phantom Planet had done the theme song. Mm-hmm. So my brother's band had done the theme song. So I was very aware of the show. And then at first I was like, I don't know, should we do this? Like, I think as a band, we were so in the heat of the moment of touring that we didn't know what to do as far as like to participate. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, explain, wait. It's not just putting music in an episode. It's like being in an episode. And it's more than just being in an episode. It's about characters going to a show that your band is playing. So it just seemed like such a unique opportunity to be presented with that, that it was like, it felt like an incredible opportunity just to be kind of woven into the fabric of a show and its characters. So it was a real privilege to have Josh, you know, think of this band Rooney in that light to give us that opportunity. And I think what's also really interesting about it too, is it really, it kind of opened up season two's use of bands and music and more artists coming in. It kind of became like, because, you know, if we go back to 03, and I can give you guys like even more context the best I can, but, you know, that was when like illegal downloading was happening, mm-hmm. like Napster. There was no Spotify. There was no iTunes. There was no YouTube. So you're like, you know, you're still selling CDs. Now there's Best Buy. There's no Tower Records-ish world. There's no, the indie music scene is kind of on physical sales is shrinking, and you're going to like big department stores to sell your product. Your in-store signings are next to a refrigerator and a Best Buy aisle. Like, you know what I mean? Everything is changing musically. Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting at is that people, I think artists were looking for new ways to reach an audience because the traditional market was changing as far as how you discovered new bands. So, you know, that's what I really noticed was like, oh, maybe this is going to, you know, maybe this is like a thing. And it was, I think it became something that was accepted by bands to not run away from opportunities that put themselves out there mm-hmm. in a new way, right? Like to show up to a series. And then it became like, you know, getting the Grey's Anatomy end credits song at the end of the episode was like a new way to be discovered. And we just kind of broke, it was kind of breaking ground, I think. And Josh was the real person to really celebrate music in that way and make it okay for shows to embrace bands. And I think if we really track it, we would find more connective tissue between bands who then expose themselves on, like we're on, you know, part of a show's arc or some kind of storyline within a series. I'm sure we could find more of that in other shows. But anyway, I'm happy that as a band that Rooney was able to kind of be a part of that in its early stages of a shift in it being more accepted in music.
Yeah. I mean, you were the first band to come on the show. You really paved the way for everyone else. And we were just so honored and like felt so special that you were willing to do it and did it. I mean, watching it back, I was like, that is so cool that Rooney, you guys were actually on the show, you know, and performing and doing the song a million times.
Yes, I know. It's kind of like doing it. Whenever I went on the road, I mean, now I haven't been touring as much, but in all the years of touring and the impact that the show had and that episode had, it's cool. You know, you meet a lot of fans who were like discovered the band through that episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they always want to know, I saw you play live on the OC. And I'm always like, yeah, we weren't live. We were playing to playback, but thank you. You know, it sounded that tight. But it's like shooting a music video. You know, it's like take one, take two, take three, different angles. Like, you know, it's also funny too, when I think about that, shooting that, you know, there were all the audience members who were brought in to be the crowd. Mm-hmm. And in between takes, you know, you're kind of standing around with your guitar and you're like, what do you do with yourself? So you end up talking to everyone in the audience. And it was just like, you know, the people in the crowd didn't necessarily know the band at that time, or maybe that wasn't their kind of music or something, but you just kind of strike up conversation with everybody there. And I don't know, it was like it is like creating a moment. And I think the moment really worked. And I think it captured an audience beyond what the show's kind of typical maybe viewership was. I think people went into, maybe it opened up a conversation beyond what was intended, I think so. But we definitely had a lot of good fans after that episode. It inspired people to kind of want to be a part of our sort of world.
The exposure was a positive and sales went up and more people knew about Rooney.
Yeah, it had a really great impact on sales. There was like a Rolling Stone article that Jenny Iliscu, who's a great writer, friend of mine, wrote this article that was all about tracking what had occurred with the Rooney appearance on the OC and how sales had gone up so high after that, and tracking like SoundScan sales, which is like the weekly reporting of sales of actual like units sold. It was like up 700% or something mm-hmm. kind of crazy number like that.
Wow.
Now it'd be hard to track because we're in a streaming world. So it's mm-hmm. like, who knows what that means in the mm-hmm. world of streaming. But I think I answered the question.
Yeah.
That's a long answer.
No, it's a great answer.
My question was, being from a family, a film family, an entertainment family, that so many of the fans wanted to know what it was like shooting and having to do the song over and over. And but you just answered that it's not dissimilar to shooting a video, which could take 24 hours of doing the song over and over again.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, film and television.
It would have been scary, to be honest, to perform live over and over again. It would have been really hard. It's so, to play live and really execute it correctly every time is really scary. And playing like on a, like doing it like the Tonight Show or something is really intense. Just you have so little time to get it right. But just like actors have on set a chance to kind of hit that take again or get another chance to do it. We were lucky to do playback. It would have been hard. I think we were also probably in the, like on the tour. I think we were like on the road and we came back to do that one shoot together with everybody. And then we went back on tour.
Wow.
But I think I hope it played all right. I feel like it must've played well. Cause I think
yes.
It felt like a live show, but we were playing the record. That was the record you would have bought. It was the same record.
Oh yeah. I mean, I had that record. Absolutely. It's so cool to see, you know, the California flag, like what you're talking about. It just immediately brings me back to that time.
Yeah. It's true. There's definitely so much of what Rooney is and was, I mean, as just a performing kind of project is so much California, even musically, it's so much of it just feels California-ish, you know, mm-hmm. to people when they hear it, that it's nice to also be part of a show called The OC and have it be a California show. I think so many things like thematically worked about it, you know?
Yeah. It was a show that was so much about music and people remember it for the music, maybe more than anything else other than like Marissa dying or Misha's character dying on the show. It's like, you know, it's really about music and the fact that we had such amazing bands on like yourself, you know, and
yeah.
It's just really fun. Yeah. To like revisit it and go back.
You know, it's cool. Like when anyone takes a chance creatively on anything, it's like it's important, you know, like you need movies and shows and people in a position of power and creation to do something unique and try to say something, you know, it's easy to just do the same old, same old, but you know, I think just at that time with that show and the embracing music and as a musician myself, who was, you know, had acted and been a part of, being a part of production. So it wasn't like a new experience for me to be on set.
Right.
But to kind of have to figure out like what that means, how to do something special on an episode like that. I don't know. I just really respect that people involved in that show were willing to do something different with that episode and try something different. I think looking back, it all was right. Cause I think it translated so well to the audience. And for so many years beyond that, people really remember that moment as like a moment.
I was going to say that Josh has very specifically said that he wasn't necessarily doing something different. He was picking songs that were on his iPad. He was just doing things he liked. And luckily the network didn't push back and try to get
it. iPod at that time. iPod 1.
What I say?
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, I sure do. The thick one with the wheel. Yep.
Yep.
Right. So he did what he wanted, and that created a new genre of being able to just to put indie bands or bands that people didn't necessarily know. And it wasn't just top 40.
Yeah. By the way, I know where you're going with that. And I agree with you. I think I was just saying to Rachel that it's amazing that when you have a showrunner, writer, creator willing to stick to the vision and carry it through the show, it's easy to conform and change and kind of fall to certain pressures you might feel throughout, you know, creating a show. But it was true to it. Again, he's not here to say these things on the show with us right now, but it's just cool that he took chances and brought in bands he really liked and kind of stayed true to his own vision as a writer, creator. I didn't realize that all that music was on his iPod, but that was the stuff of that time. That was the alt rock scene of that time.
We are diving into exploring the cultural impact of the OC and bands like Rooney and Phantom Planet.
Yeah.
And I do want to mention that again, it's your brother's band and it became the theme of our show. Mm-hmm. And so you guys are like family. You're like OC family.
Yeah. I mean, even with the Phantom Planet thing is such even more impactful with that theme song. That was obviously it's amazing when a theme song becomes more than the song itself in a way, you know, like the Friends theme song or like there are songs that really are existing pieces of music, but when they're in the context of how they're used in this sort of bigger way, they take on this whole new life to them and they make you think right away, the OC.
Mm-hmm.
So no, it's true. I mean, I'm happy. And Jason, you know, co-wrote that song, California.
Mm-hmm.
And So as myself and my brother, as songwriters, it's nice to be kind of celebrated or embraced by the show, to have our kind of history with it. From a different perspective, I know with your guys' show, you've met different people you've worked with over the years. But, you know, as a musician, I think back to it, I have my own sort of relationship with the show and my own sort of participation in it. It's a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. And everyone then in listening, the future, Jason Schwartzman is Robert's brother. I know, you know, people are probably like, oh, yes.
Great drummer.
Great drummer.
Amazing songwriter.
Great actor.
Man of Planet. Great actor. Come on now.
Do you remember anything from the actual shoot or like where we were? Yeah, like any memories?
I remember so much of it, but I also kind of, it's a little bit, it's like hazy, but I remember it at the same time.
Right.
Like, I feel like we were definitely in LA. I think we were like in like North Hollywood or something. Like
yeah,
we were up in the valley, like, but north-ish.
Uh-huh.
Burbank. I want to say Burbank or something, but. And then there was a venue. We shot in like a venue,
mm-hmm.
and they had either built a stage that was sort of like a semicircle, kind of went out into the crowd. I remember it wasn't like, I have to go back and look at the footage, but I don't remember. It wasn't like a packed show. Like,
right.
It wasn't like, whoa, oh my God. Like I can't get someone else in this room kind of a show. But people seem to be having a good time at that show. And then I remember, so we did the whole shoot on the stage. And then I remember having to say a few lines. And honestly, I was like kind of terrified because I, you know, for some reason, when you make music, like having acted in movies prior, I just have always been terrified with like memorizing dialogue because I always want to get it really perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And like when you... I don't know what it is, but when you sing music, you almost feel like you're safe, like protected more by like you. Like like the idea of like getting on stage and performing a scene is like terrifying. It's like, it sounds so scary to me to do that, but getting on stage and singing a song feels like totally, I'm totally good with that. For some reason, I don't know what it is, like why there's a difference, but maybe it's just like the physicality or just a feeling of how when you sing, you feel something in your body. It's like a resonance or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember having to like sort of call upon those acting like skills or whatever would be needed in that kind of exchange. But also you're playing yourself in a way. Mm-hmm. You're playing this like band Rooney kind of coming into the concert. I think we like showed up in a limo.
Yeah.
Which was like so funny because like who shows up to a limo like right before the concert?
You don't do that?
No, like we would be at the show already because we would have been there all day long. That's definitely not how a concert goes. That was the more glamorous television kind of side of it where maybe like a viewer might think, wow, that's how bands show up. It's like in their limo. But no, if you're a band going to a show, you typically were there during the day. You had a sound check. You had to prep it and get ready for your concert. You don't just kind of stumble in and like play a great show. But and then I just remember like being like, Rachel, I remember seeing like being with all the actors together. I feel like we all got in the limo. Maybe it was between takes to kind of wait it out.
Huh. Yeah.
But I just kind of remember being with everybody together and no one really knew each other, like on a personal level. So you're just kind of there. But I don't know if that's a good recollection. But, I think we did it all in a day.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of just jammed through it, which was kind of pretty good.
I think so. It was like one day or one night or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Just over and over.
Yeah.
All at that location.
You know, what's funny too, is like you and the cast by that, I think you must have had a lot of momentum and time with everybody to really, you know, kind of have that personal friendship developed, you know, on set or just being with each other so much. And then we were the kind of, I guess you could say like the new kids in town in a way, like going up to set, we're a band, there's a different kind of feeling, you know, coming up. So I'm curious what your guys' perspective was of us. Like,
I mean,
we were just
what was funny is because you were rewatching this and it was so long ago and I had mentioned this, but watching it, I'm like, why didn't we hang out with you guys like all the time? And I was like, dude, we should have become like super good friends and like gone to all the shows, you know? And I remember thinking that watching the episode. I do remember you being super cool. Obviously, we were all young and I think we were a pretty friendly set. I mean, at least I know, being pretty welcoming and stuff, but I just thought you were the coolest and your band was super cool. And I remember having so much fun that night shooting it, but watching it back, I was like, yeah, man, should have hung out with you guys.
That's awesome. I'm glad you saw it that way and felt that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, I know not just because of COVID, but music has been on hold. Obviously, just the world we live in today, it's not, I mean, maybe it's changing now, but music wasn't a thing for a long time. I'm sure you saw online, a lot of artists couldn't play shows, festivals were canceled, but for myself, I'm happy you're saying that because when there is a show at some point in the future, you guys have to come out.
Absolutely. And oh my gosh.
That would be great.
It's just been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. And to get the personal invite to your first show back.
Yes. No, I truly will. I just like, I'll reach out and I'll make sure that we're in touch and I'll keep
you. Well, I have a feeling Josh would like that invite too. Yeah.
He can be my plus one.
I would love that. Yeah. If you talk to Josh, tell him. I'd love, of course.
I will. It's Rachel's brother.
He's become my brother in life. So.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
I will relay the message. Thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
And congrats on all your success.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Follow, rate, and review Welcome to the OC Bitches wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed, heat-induced insomnia. That was my aha moment, bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible, signing up on Shopify.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22, shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh
and I'm Rabia
Chaudhry. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.